Welcome back to another episode of the Strength and Speed Podcast. I'm your host, Mudgear Hannibal Race Pro Evan Preparis, and Strength and Speed owner. I've got a guest with me online. Before we get to him, though, a quick word from this episode's sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Yoked. Yoked is made with Fortitropin, so it is a strength enhancement product made of fertilized egg yolk. It's made, turned into a nice powder, and you can sprinkle it on your yogurt, sprinkle it on your food, or you can just drink it straight out of the little packets they come in. Anyone who's been at Savage Race in the last year or two has probably seen them, has maybe even tried some. Tastes super good. If anyone wants to try some, code STRENGTH20 will give you 20% off. That is STRENGTH20. And then if you're interested in some of the Medusa stuff, stick around to the end. I have another brand I'm working with that has some Medusa-related products that I need to remember to remind myself to plug at the end. It's pretty cool. I think some of you will like them. All right, so let's bring on our guests. We've got Jason Schultz. Jason, say hi.
Hey, everybody.
So Jason is been training martial arts for more than 20 years. He is a Medusa Edge Weapon System instructor, the second one ever certified. And he is teaches gutter fighting, which is essentially the World War II combatives system. So we're going to be deep diving into some of his background, some of the lessons learned that we can pull out and apply to learning a complex skill or, you know, mindset, apply it to obstacle course racing, et cetera, stuff like that. So Jason, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
Yeah. So let's jump back in time real quick. Start off with like how, talk to me about, you know, Jason growing up. You know, how did you get involved in martial arts? Did you play any sports in high school or anything like that?
All right. So growing up, my first introduction to martial culture was actually freestyle wrestling through the police athletic league. Didn't last long there because I couldn't leg drop my opponent. You know, when you're in kindergarten, pro wrestling and freestyle wrestling are two completely different things. But, you know, I really got serious with judo in the fourth grade. Went, participated in an after-school program there. Went to karate at the age of 13 or 12, 13. Studied Kobayashi Shorinru Shorinkan for a number of years. Attained my Shodan there. Left due to some political reasons. Joined up with an MMA club. And from there, you know, I realized that I really didn't want to compete. I wasn't interested in sparring or rolling around too much. I just wanted a, you know, quick, no-nonsense method of self-protection. And that's when I found the World War II stuff.
Gotcha. So for, I'm also going to jump back.
Yep.
Talk to me about how tall you are. And yeah, tell me how tall you are.
I'm 6'7".
6'7", yeah. That is massive. You are more than a foot taller than me. And tell people where you're from also.
I'm from Long Island, New York.
Yeah, another Long Islander. So
that's
I don't
right.
is police athletic league, is that a nationwide thing or is that just a Long Island thing?
I think it might just be a Long Island thing. I say PAL to other people and they have no clue what I'm talking
okay.
about.
Yeah, because I don't remember ever seeing it outside of Long Island. So that's gonna be funny. All right, so bounced around a bunch of different martial arts for a while and then found gutter fighting. For those of you who are not familiar, explain what gutter fighting World War II combatives is.
Yep. So World War II combatives is essentially simplified classical jiu-jitsu. Jiu-jitsu, prior to becoming a sport-based system, had open and closed hand strikes, kicks, throws. It wasn't just grappling. Mm-hmm. So Fairbairn, prior to World War II, when he was working as an officer for the Shanghai Municipal Police, he was charged with creating a method of unarmed combat for the officers to be able to compete empty-handed or with makeshift weapons, knives, clubs, with the triad and the tong in the streets of Shanghai. And Fairbairn was able to create this formidable force, you know, the world's first SWAT team, out of, you know, these men who just came off the street, and he taught them his system.
Nice, yeah. And if anyone's, that name sounds familiar to any of my knife people out there, that is Sykes Fairbairn has a famous dagger that is in like the Ranger Memorial. It's used in a lot of like the special operations logos and stuff like that. This long black double-edged dagger.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, when you decided to get into that system, did you find someone who was an instructor, or were you like, did you just pick up his books, right? Because he's got a couple of books linked to his system.
You know, initially, when I was doing my research, I made an order through Paladin Press for a couple of the old World War II manuals. I picked up Fairbairn's All In Fighting, Dr. Gordon Perregard's Arwology, and John Steyer's Cold Steel. And the fact that these three separate books from three separate countries, you know, all had such similar movements and similar methodologies, they had to be onto something, you know. So then I moved from there. I found Kelly McCann's material, and luckily I was able to train with him personally. And I've trained with a handful of other guys in the field, and I've been able to just absorb their knowledge. You know, I don't know everything. I know I don't know everything. You know, I'm that cliched eternal student.
Yeah.
So, you know, when people ask me who do I go to learn from, I'll learn from, you know, a tier one guy, or I'll learn from Hobo Joe, who just happens to know that you can bandage yourself up with brown paper over white paper because it helps your blood clot faster.
Interesting. Yeah. So do you feel like your background in other martial arts was necessary to kind of come into gutter fighting, or does that make you more well-rounded? Like, how does that play into what you currently train and study?
I think the only benefit it gave me was the understanding of proper body mechanics. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of bad habits to unlearn from the years I spent doing karate. You know, the rigid postures, pocketing your hands.
Yeah.
You know, all that isn't conducive to an actual physical conflict. You know, you need to be loose, you need to move, you need to flow, you need to keep your hands up. And they don't teach you that in a dojo.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I feel like that has a lot of, for obstacle course racing, it's a relatively new sport, right? But fitness is old. So most of the people that are involved in obstacle course racing came from another background. So they're right. Bringing either skills or sometimes unnecessary body weight, muscle baggage, you know, bad habits from something else that they're coming into obstacle course racing with. So some aspects very similar.
I might be off base, but like that would be, in my mind, that would be expecting, you know, a lineman to perform better at American Ninja than a gymnast.
Yeah.
You know, one may be physically stronger, but other one has more functional strength.
Right.
You know, it's the same thing with the martial arts, where you may have functional skill. You may be able to beat somebody in a point fighting situation, but if you're caught outside and you don't have those judges, you don't have that gear on, and you get caught, you know, that could be the end of your night.
Yeah.
You know, it's you know, not everything is transferable. A lot of it is, but there are those things, you know, they don't teach mindset. They don't teach you, you know, you have to have a certain level of dedication with traditional martial arts if you want to get anywhere with it. But the dedication with the gutter fighting or Kelly McCann's combatives or Lee Morrison's urban combatives, that dedication is wanting to get home at the end of the night to your family. It's not about putting a belt around your waist. It's not about getting a certificate. It's about, hey, I'm getting home tonight. And getting home could be something as simple as I'm crossing the street because I see trouble up ahead. It's not always about I could knock this guy out.
Very true. Very true. So how often are you training specifically for gutter fighting versus you know, doing some other cross training or something like that?
Well, I train every day. Even if it's just for 20 minutes, I do something. It's not always the same thing, and I try to do the things I hate the most. Otherwise, I'm not going to do them at all.
That's a great tip. That's a great tip. I mean, that's a great tip for obstacle course racers too. Yeah. Like the working on your weaknesses and focusing on that is absolutely.
You know, growing up, my grandfather always told me, you know, he grew up in Barbados. And when they would have dinner, he would always save his favorite course for last. And when they had company come over, they would have to put their food back in the middle of the table, redivide it. So he would always get less and less of his favorite food. So then he started to eat his favorite food first, get it out of the way. And then as the meal progressed, he didn't enjoy it as much. Mm-hmm. I took that logic and put it to the way towards the way I train. I take the things that I hate and get them out of the way first. That way I can spend the remainder of my time, you know, benefiting from the positive mental state that I'm in, actually enjoying what I'm doing.
Yeah. So how do you stay, right, if we're not competing, which is like a big part of obstacle course racing, how do you stay motivated to keep training? Is it that kind of real world desire to come home? Or because I feel like with a goal like that, you know, sometimes you can skip a day and you're like, well, it doesn't really matter because, you know, nothing happened today. So maybe it wasn't a big deal. How do you stay motivated? Like, how do you maintain that drive?
You know, half of it's the dedication. You know, you have to love it. If you don't love it, it's, you know, you're not going to do what you need to do to progress, to hone your skills, to maintain your skills. You know, there are guys who say they can train once a month and they're comfortable with what they can do. That's just not the way I think. You know, I have a Bob set up in my living room. I got my son a wave bag, you know, the moment he could throw a punch. It's always just been a part of my life. And when times came where I had to stop, I didn't feel like a complete person at that point. Not so much that I make it that big of a part of my life, but it's just been a part of who I am for so long that when I don't have it, it feels like a critical piece of me is missing. Like if you're out of work.
Yeah.
You know, I imagine it's the same type of thing.
Yeah, we have a couple of guys I train with at work who have been injured and haven't been allowed to essentially go on the mat and do combative / grappling / jiu-jitsu, whatever you want to call it. And yeah. They, like, it is mentally, it eats at them because they get upset. They see everyone else training, everyone else is having a good time, and they're like, it becomes almost depressing for a lot of them. So
yeah, oh, definitely. It the first rough. Time I had to take time off the mat, I was 16 and I had pulled a muscle in my neck and I couldn't roll for 2 weeks. I was miserable, you know, and that was only 2 weeks and I was a 16-year-old kid. I couldn't imagine how it would feel right now if I, you know, broke something or tore something in my knee.
Any tips for, let's say someone does get injured, right? Do you have any tips for how you kind of maintain that positive mental attitude or tips for continue to improve? Yeah.
Yeah. First of all, you know, let go of the ego. The training is always going to be there the next day. It's not going to disappear. You're not going to disappear. You're not going to fall apart if you don't train when you're hurt.
Yeah.
When you're hurt, your job is to heal. It's like I tell people with the body conditioning drills. You know, I saw somebody post from my old dojo on Facebook a picture of a bloody makiwara board. Now, for the listeners, a makiwara board is traditionally a piece of Okinawan red oak that is wrapped with rope. And it's used to punch, edge of hand, kick. And it causes microfractures in the bone that causes the calcium deposits to grow denser, to help strengthen the bone, yada, yada, yada. And the purpose of that is not to hurt yourself. You go slow. It takes a long time to do it. This picture was posted with blood all over the makiwara. Now, when I trained at the school, if I cut myself training, I had to stop. I had to bandage it. I had to clean the striking post. And I had to do push-ups for allowing myself to get hurt because I was going too hard. He's now posting pictures glorifying that type of behavior, you know? So the information that's out there, you know, you need to go slow with everything. You need to take your time. You know, your body can only handle so much punishment that if you do train hurt, that if you do train improperly, you know, you only have one chassis. You can't get a frame up restoration. You're not a car. You know, you need to take care of yourself. I'm 43 years old. You know, I've got a hip impingement. I've got deteriorating discs in my lower back because I didn't take care of my body when I was younger. I did stupid training. I allowed myself to get thrown on concrete. You know, you got to do it the right way the first time. Don't try to impress people. You know, you're not going to gain points with your instructor rolling injured.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to impress your teammates if you can't help them compete. You're not going to, you know, if you're relied on to be somewhere at a certain time and you can't be there because you were stupid, that's on you.
Yeah. I mean, you hit on several things that goes right down for our obstacle course racers, listeners, and for martial artists too, right? So the first one is, you know, when I'm training, hanging off monkey bars and grips and stuff like that, if I feel my skin on my hands start to rip, I that's it. Right, the training day's over. And if you rip something immediately, you end the training day, right? I don't exactly. Power through something in training because it's just going to cause more problems, and then it's going to take me out for a longer amount of time. Versus if I go right up to the line where I feel like my skin on my hands is about to rip, and then back off, mm-hmm. I can train the next day or the day exactly. after, whatever it may be, and it'd still be fine. Versus
right.
You know, destroying.
And what round did you lose in that 2 days?
Yeah.
You know, it's unfathomable. You didn't lose any ground in that 2 days.
And then the other kind of, I forgot what I was going to say, but one of the other things with just like martial arts and obstacle course racing, there is a lot of, it's multifaceted, right? So it's not like, you know, in sports like running, it's like, I run, that's it. There's nothing else. With martial right. arts, there's mindset, you know, there's katas, there's bags, there's sparring, there's drilling, yep. right? Same thing with obstacle course racing. I mean, you can work on balance, yep. you can work on upper body, you can work on lower body, you can work on running, you can work on, you can watch technique videos, right? You can work exactly. on mindset. There's all sorts of mindset skill training. One of our protein partners is 3GX Mental Training. Sarah Grippy Snyder. So anyone listen to Obstacle Running Adventures, she was just recently on that podcast last month. She's got a whole bunch of mental tips. You can work on stuff like that. The book, How Bad Do You Want It? My book on endurance has a bunch of tips as well. So lots of different aspects you can work on. You don't have to only, like, if you're your hand doing Makiwara, right? You don't have to go back to Makiwara the next day.
No, not at all.
You know?
You know, I was out on my patio this morning, kicking my conditioning bag, and you know, towards the fifth set, I was thinking to myself, you know, that it's just not feeling right today. Instead of doing the remaining five, you know, I packed it up.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not too proud. Who, you know, like I said, who am I trying to impress?
Yeah. That's big too, especially if you're like in the social media age. People will, when they like train for Ninja or train for OCR, sometimes people will try to do these crazy moves that are like, are you going to have to do that in a race? No. Why are you right. doing this like absolutely insane move that increases the rate of injury so you can get a couple more likes on TikTok? Or
yeah. You're going to take yourself out of the game so you can get 1,000 likes.
Right.
You know, right. it's
yeah. Good stuff there. For right, so you study a bunch of these World War II combatives. Yep. Why? Two questions. First one, why go that route instead of being like, well, I'm going to study, you know, the Army has updated a modern Army combatives program. It's a slightly different. Why not do that or something else? Like, why World War II combatives specifically?
Let's see. I don't know if Larson had debuted MAC at the time.
He came out in 95. They started it, but it didn't like it didn't gain steam until kind of like I'd say early 2000s.
Okay, yeah, because I saw it when I was training the gutter fighting initially, and it was, you know, to me it just looked like BJJ and Muay Thai, which is great.
You know, the early versions, you're like spot on.
yeah, and that's just, you know, it's just. I'd had experience with those two things already, and I just wanted to try something different.
Okay.
And I knew, you know, so I used to have a hang up with being certified. And I knew if I had followed or trained along with the Modern Army Combatives program, there would be no way or difficult for me as a civilian to get certified as an instructor, as far as I knew at the time.
Correct. Yeah. It's, That's still technically true unless you go get a job as a as a instructor for the military. Like they don't teach it to outsiders, even though a lot of the stuff is just an aggregation of stuff you can learn on the outside. Right.
You know, and I was caught up on that whole certification thing. And to this day, I don't have a certification to teach gutter fighting. I just have, you know, the ability to teach people and the knowledge. And I had Kelly McCann tell me just to get off my ass and hang my shingle. You know, that's all it took. And people started coming when I started showing that I knew what I was talking about and I knew what I could do.
Mm-hmm.
People started coming. They didn't care about what somebody had written on a piece of paper about me.
Right. Yeah. You can, again, you hit it not spot on. The obstacle course racing, we don't have, I think we have one quote unquote certifying obstacle course race specialty, right? Spartan came out with a SGX certification, but there's no, besides them, there's no other like obstacle course racing specific certification. It's just a matter of like finding someone who has a basis and understanding of, you know, training progression and then has obstacle course racing skill and can mend the two and then effectively transfer that skill to other people, right? Because just because you're good at doing something doesn't mean you're a good teacher.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. Being able to do something does not mean you can transfer that knowledge.
Yes.
That is something that I had to learn. You know, as an instructor, I'm still finding my voice. You know, because I had, for the longest time, I battled with imposter syndrome.
Oh, that never goes away for like anything.
No, it's insane. But I've been so lucky to just been, you know, surrounded by the right people. You know, people that continue to support me. And, you know, I have a great family of choice. And I wouldn't, you know, without them, I wouldn't be who I am or where I am right now.
Yeah, that support system is huge.
Yeah.
That imposter syndrome, I feel like, I mean, you look at my qualifications for obstacle course racing and my military stuff, and there's still days when I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, I don't, like, I've got a lot of certs, but like, I don't feel that good.
No, when it finally clicked to me as to who you were, I thought, my first thought is, why is this guy coming to me? You know?
So speaking of which, I'm gonna use this as an opportunity to plug your books, right? So I found you because of your books is how I found you. I basically anytime I hear about a knife or edge weapon system or a methodology, whatever you want to call it, I get obsessive. I go down the rabbit hole real quick, and I will watch every YouTube video I can find. I will like buy any DVDs I can find. I will read any books I can find until I feel like I have hit the bottom of that. That rabbit hole there, and then I'll switch focuses, and that's how I found you. I was following a knife company. They posted that they had your book. I picked up your book, and I liked the methodology that it was taught inside, and I was like, oh, this is good and similar to what we teach in the Army's combative system, and I wanted to make sure I got all the available information, which is how I'm reaching out to you. Yeah.
Awesome.
So since we started diving down that already, talk to people about Medusa Edge Weapon System.
So the Medusa Edge Weapon System was developed by Michael and his son, Seth Raymond. They were a little fed up with how complicated knife systems were getting. It seemed like every year new material was being added to their curriculums. And he felt like he was constantly, I guess, trying to play catch up or whatnot. So he wanted to develop a quick, no-nonsense, you know, reality-based knife defense system. Not even knife defense system, more just like a pointed tool defense system, you know, where you could use a pen, a screwdriver, a chopstick, just something, which would be easily learned, easily adapted, and easily deployed if necessary. You know, it's not meant to be a be-all and end-all edged weapon system. It's a, you know, oh no, I need this now.
Right.
You know, so if somebody wants to study a more complex system, you know, go for it. You know, I wish you the best. But if you need something for now, that's what Medusa is for. Medusa is for if you're going on a trip in 6 months and you want to feel a little bit safer if you're going to a place that you really shouldn't be going.
Yeah.
You know, where you're going to learn to inflict mass casualty damage on somebody in a short amount of time, provided you have that dedication to the act.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people who are interested in self-defense, that's what it turns into, where it's like, hey, I'm going on a trip next month or in a couple of months, or my daughter goes to college in a couple of weeks. What can you teach me? And it's like, well, I'm not going to sit down and try to instill a decade worth of martial arts lessons into
a weekend.
But like, what can I teach that's simplistic, which is, that's what drew me to Medusa. And same thing, the other, one of the companies I help produce content for, Tiga Tactics, same thing. They have very simplistic methods that have, you know, guys who have a ton of martial arts experience were like, hey, here's what I'm teaching. Here's what's going to help you get home at the end of the day. Train this, rep it, and go out. And, you know, if you need to use it, at least you have like a baseline understanding versus going to a, you know, martial arts gym and they're, you spent the first couple of months doing kata, right? And
exactly. Yeah.
I would argue a lot of people go to traditional martial arts gyms, and I've gone to them. I continue to go to similar ones. I would argue some of them get worse before they get better.
Oh, right? Definitely.
Because you end up like, you're thinking about, you're not even thinking about just being aggressive. They're thinking about like doing the technique right. So they slow down. They're like, all right. Yep. I punch. Oh, no, wait. This hand was supposed to be higher. My rear hand is supposed to be guarding. So they'll like stop, move the rear hand while the other hand's still extended versus just like being super aggressive. So,
yeah, that's one of the things we, you know, we'll amplify that in our seminars. If we see somebody think that they messed up during a drill, we encourage them to keep going. Go through your mistake. You don't stop and reset, because in real life, you're not going to have the ability to reset.
Yeah.
You have to think on your feet and move through the problem.
Yeah. Same thing again for obstacle course racing. Same thing. We're going across an obstacle, a rig or something. And you're in training, you mess up, you should try to power through it. All right. Now I'm spinning from one hand as opposed to like securely with both hands. Right. Mm-hmm. If you work through a lot of those problems during training, when they happen during race day, or in martial arts case on the street, in a real life encounter, you'll be better able to work through those complex problems because you've had those issues before. I think there's like a famous story of Michael Phelps's like swim goggles came off or something during one of his races, and he still won.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, how did you do it? And he's like, well, it's happened to me before in training. So I just powered through it like I did in training. And it's like, if you put in enough reps, you will, I wouldn't say you hit every possibility, but you hit a lot of them. You hit the most common. Yeah.
Definitely.
Did we mention where the Medusa is derived from? I can't remember if you said it already.
Oh, no. So Medusa comes from the American prison culture. Mike and Seth Raymond reviewed hundreds, if not thousands of hours of closed circuit camera footage, inmate interviews, guard interviews. You know, he's interviewed ex-cons who are now on the outside, published authors who have been in prison and involved in violence inside. And he took the most common denominators and compiled them into one methodology, which involves shocking, latching, and then stabbing your target.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know some of these answers, but I'm going to ask anyway. Mm-hmm. What's the... You know, I think there's sometimes when you hear they've learned a fighting system coming out of a prison, they feel like, well, what are you glorifying prison culture? Are you glorifying prison behavior? How do you respond to that? Yeah.
So the way we respond to that is we're taking knowledge that's already out there, knowledge that they're already working with, knowledge that they've weaponized against us, and we're giving it to the common man. We're giving it to the guy who hopefully never has to pick up a knife, a woman who hopefully never has to pick up a knife. And we're giving them the knowledge that these people are, you know, inducted into. Mm-hmm. There's a reason they call prisons the animal factory. You know, you don't go to prison to get rehabilitated 9 times out of 10.
Yeah, we saw from downrange from Iraq and stuff, we saw similar stuff with terrorism, sometimes people would go into the prison, into the, you know, the prison system overseas, right? And they would make connections and learn techniques for building bombs, and then get released. And now I'm almost creating a schoolhouse for people.
Exactly.
If their sentences from being captured in Iraq or Afghanistan are short enough, I've essentially created a pool of knowledge where they're just spreading the knowledge around and coming back out.
Yeah. It's self-propagating.
Yeah. I think you mentioned it earlier, was like you'll learn from anyone. So and same thing, right? I have no problem learning from anyone. I think everyone has different experiences and that you can learn from. So you know, even if it's learning from prisoners, but I'm using the techniques they are applying, but I'm using them for good, you know, that kind of flips the knowledge on its head. And it's
exactly.
And if you know, if the average civilian was walking around as a more of a threat to other criminals, maybe some of them would think twice before they start attacking civilians.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. You know, you look at places that have the higher ownership of, you know, private firearms and the ability to carry, and you have much lower crime rates. You know, an armed society is a polite society.
I was about to use the quote.
But the beautiful thing about Medusa, though, is it can be employed without a knife. If you have a pocket stick, if you have a non-lethal item, and you still employ that as if you were going through the Medusa methodology, you have now a less lethal opportunity to subdue your attacker. So if you are queasy about knives and you don't want to carry a knife, you know, you can get a Kopo stick or a pocket stick, you know, or a Yawara.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just keep that in your bag, keep that in your pocket, keep it on your keychain if you want.
Yeah. Another thing I really liked about Medusa is it starts from the draw, right? Like, or it starts from not having it in your hand, where a lot of knife systems will start and it's like, all right, so we line up and we both have knives and we've squared off with each other. And it's like, wait, how did I get to this position? Why am I standing in a room with another dude with two knives? You know?
Exactly. No, we don't want to get to the knife. You know, stabbing the target is the last thing we want to do. That's why we shock. We shock, you know, to the four targets. And the targets are the eyes, the throat, which includes the whole of the neck, the groin, and the ankle, or the instep to the ankle. And those four areas provide us with enough opportunity to create enough damage with that shock technique to extricate ourselves from the area, to flee if we can. We don't want to latch up with this guy if we don't have to. We only go to latch if our shock doesn't work the way we expect it to or the way we intend it to. And then with latch, if we can't subdue him, we can't control him, then we go to stab. But we have to be quick with our decisions. We're not trying to spar with this guy. We're not trying to play around. You know, we have to measure his intent. So, you know, it's a choose your own adventure kind of thing. And I'm not playing lawyer, but everyone's life is our own responsibility.
Yeah. Absolutely. Don't outsource your safety there.
Right.
Absolutely. Now, I've coming from the obstacle course race world, where we seem to like sometimes fall into like tribes or maybe the less polite term would be cults, where people are like, I only do Spartan. That's it. And then there are people who are like, I only do Tough Mudder. I don't go to Spartan, because even though they're the same company, parent company now. And then there are people who are like, I only do Savage Race and like other mandatory completion obstacle course races. I don't do the other two.
Yeah.
Coming into the martial arts world, I've seen some of that as well, even within like the sub community of like the bladed arts world.
Oh yeah. Where the bladed community probably has to be the worst with the whole cult thing.
You think so?
I actually made a t-shirt last year on my bonfire site that says knife cult on the front. And a whole bunch of guys actually wore it to Blade Show last year, you know, just as a joke. And It was, you know, the knife cult thing is ridiculous. You have guys that train in systems that refuse to cross train, refuse to train with you if you don't train their system. And I'm like, we all have the same goal at the end of the day. We all want the same thing, or we should all want the same thing. Why not work together?
Yeah.
You know, myself and the founder of one of our, you know, formerly, I guess you could say, competing systems, have now built a bridge, and we're actually going to be together on another podcast in the near future. And I'm really looking forward to that because, again, it's providing us a chance to build a community around something that really needs community.
Yeah. So, yeah, you mentioned just like obstacle course racing, right? The amount of similarities you have, two people who train in bladed systems, the amount of overlap and overlapping and aligned interest you have, or like 90%. It's just like the nuance of how you're performing techniques is different.
Right.
Which is just like same thing with obstacle course racing, right? They're both people going out there and like trying to be the most physically fit, best versions of themselves, doing something that's hard. One of my friends calls it the narcissism of small differences, where like the biggest opposition you'll get is people who are like 90%, 95% the same, but that 5% is like, well, we can't be friends because
That 5% is huge.
So what, as someone who has, you know, helped build some bridges, what advice would you have for anyone who's in any sport or martial art who has those competing interests or competing, you know, like, how have you built bridges? I guess what I'm asking.
Be pure in your intention. Only do it if you really want to do it. Don't have any, you know, hidden agenda. Don't do it because you think it might make you look good. Do it only because it's what your soul tells you you need to do. You know, if it'll help you sleep easier, if you think it'll help your community, if you think it'll help your family, if you think it'll help one person in a beneficial way, do it. If you think you're going to do it because it's going to put money in your pocket, it's not worth it, because then you're putting a price on your intentions. And that just doesn't, you know, vibe with me.
All right. So you mentioned some of the why. What about the how? Like, how would you suggest building bridges to other people within your nuanced specialty community to make things a better place for all type of thing?
When you can, listen to the source. You know, don't take second and third party information to heart. If you can talk to the source of the supposed information, talk to them head up, you know, man to woman to woman, whatever. And get everything hashed out as soon as possible. That way, one thing doesn't become another when it shouldn't have been anything to begin with. You know, there are enough molehills become mountains in this community that we need to start, you know, laying them down. And just having an open mind, you know, going to the party, not posting your drama online, you know, handle everything like adults. Try not to be tribalistic. There is no reason for it in this day and age. And I don't mean tribal as in family-wise, where you have your tribe. I mean tribal as in we study this system and we can't do anything else. If your instructor doesn't allow you to cross-train, you probably shouldn't be at that school.
Yeah. Now, all good advice. You know, I haven't told you this, just before this phone call, you'd posted a while ago, a podcast link, and I commented on it in our like private group. I was like, oh, I'm not really a fan of this person or this system. I didn't really expand beyond that. And one of the guys from FMA discussions actually reached out to me and was like, hey, Evan, I, you know, wanted to talk to you about the thing you weren't a fan of. So I had like a 15-minute phone call with him before here. And he was, again, he made the bridge to reach out, and we kind of talked it out. And I wasn't, I don't have any hard feelings against that system or that style or whatever. I was just, I had some perceptions from that stuff I've seen online, and he explained his point of view and kind of why he thinks it's valuable. And I was like, I went from something where like I wasn't not a fan of something to like, okay, well, you know, I can see where they're coming from. It may, yeah. maybe it's not the right system for me, but right. I'm still open to learning more about it versus prior to that conversation, I had eventually, I had done enough research where I was like, eh, I don't think I want to know anymore. Right. After talking to him and kind of just, you know, just getting his point of view and his take on things, it's changed my mind. So,
okay, yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
I like to hear that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't even know.
You know who I'm talking about.
I have no idea who you're even talking about.
Oh, it's
I love what I'm hearing.
Yeah, it's Dean Franco from FMA Discussions.
Oh, okay, I got you.
Yeah, so yeah, he reached out. He's running a couple of seminars and like online stuff. So,
okay,
super cool. And he explained his point of view and why he thinks it has value. And you know, I can see some of those. So,
okay,
yeah. And again, I was never hostile to, like, I'm not hostile towards that style, that system. It was just,
no.
I saw it and I was like, okay, not my cup of tea. I'm going to look at something right. else.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's perfectly acceptable. You know, you didn't make a big deal out of it. You didn't trash it. It's, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. So, and like we talked about earlier, you know, even if you do different styles or different systems or do different races, like, you are so close to the same person. It's mm-hmm. scary. It's, right. you know, so. All right. Anything else I missed before we start wrapping things up here?
No, I think we've hit the bases.
Okay. So let's do, tell us something people would be surprised to know about you.
So I'm extremely spiritual. I don't follow an organized religion. Okay. But I believe in something higher. I don't know what it is. Is it a roadmap to the universe? Is it higher astrology? Is it, you know, who knows what it is? But I believe there is something out there that guides us. And that's what compels me to keep my intentions pure.
Nice. I love it. Well, I actually just updated my website a couple months ago. I had to switch hosts and stuff like that. So I now have a faith component of my website.
Okay.
So my website was basically all hybrid fitness, obstacle course racing focused. And now it's like fitness, fighting, and faith, right? So it's the...
I saw that you're Orthodox.
I am, yeah.
And before I found my path, I actually flirted with Orthodoxy out here in Suffolk County.
Yeah.
I found a church by the old Smith Haven, South Haven Park. And I went there and it, you know, in the beginning, it felt like home and then it just wasn't for me. And, you know, he always made me feel comfortable. He told me that I was welcome back if I had a change of heart. And I have so much respect for that community.
Yeah, it's a great, I grew up in it. That being said, a couple of years ago, I started like really examining my faith and being like, well, you know, like what's the probability I was born into the right place? Probably pretty low. So like I went back and started like, I started from square one. I was like, well, let me see if I even believe Christianity. And then I started right. like digging into that. And then I was like, wait, I didn't, that's not beginning. I need to see if I believe in God or like a higher being. And I mm-hmm. backed up even further and basically had to settle those questions in my mind. Then back to Christianity, then back to the subset of Christianity, like the denomination. And the conclusion I came to was Orthodoxy is the correct one. And I think what surprises people is I'm always like, well, if you've got a better solution, like I'm open to it. Like I'll switch religions. But to me, the evidence backs that up. And that's why I'm that path. And I also think that's why Orthodox Christians, I feel like, tend to be really bad at like evangelizing and like spreading the message. Versus some of the other denominations, I feel like are much more, I'm going to use the term aggressive, but not in a bad way. Mm-hmm. Like
right.
proactive. That's a better term.
Yeah.
They are more proactive and they are better at versus a lot of the Orthodoxy feel like they're like, well, we believe we have the right answer. And if you mm-hmm. do enough research, you'll come to the same conclusion. So why do I have to go? All right. I have to argue with
right.
people.
So, exactly. Exactly. And I got to respect an outlook like that, you know? If they're so sure, but again, I'm like you, show me a better way and I'll listen.
Yeah.
You know, I'm doing what I'm doing now because it's what makes sense for me now. And it's what I've seen work for now, but you know, in 10 years, who knows where I'll be, who knows who I'll be in 10 years.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, if you ever want to discuss orthodoxy, you hit me up.
No, definitely.
I'll give you a rundown. And
all right.
I do a lot of research on my own time and my future path that is going to be even more so on that field.
I got a guy you can reach out to. I'll talk to you offline about him.
I think I reached out to him already. Is this Michael's first name?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I was listening to a podcast on a run the other day, and I heard him like they were talking about martial arts the whole time, and he took like a hard right turn into orthodoxy mid podcast, and I was like, I need to hit this dude up.
Yeah, that's my big brother. He's the one who introduced me to orthodoxy.
It was good stuff. Yeah. The audience will hear from him at some point too. I'm gonna get him on the podcast as well.
Yeah, you will. Yeah, you will. That'll be an interesting conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. We're actually going to start closing it up now. Jason, it's been great. I appreciate all of your input, your knowledge. And then also, if I didn't mention it already, you took the time to, we did some Zoom classes and give me some feedback with Medusa and helped get me certified as an instructor, or you certified me as an instructor, rather. So
yep.
I really
all set up.
I appreciate that. And I love being a part of that community and, digging through some of the knowledge base that's within that group of instructors, because that's been really cool. Kind of see all the different opinions and pick their brains on some stuff. So,
yep, definitely. We got guys from all walks of life in there.
I appreciate it. And are you doing, I've heard you mention on other podcasts, are you doing that thing you do around Thanksgiving every year, or is that still an ongoing thing?
You know, I didn't do it this past year due to some health issues, but okay. Thanksgiving is on for 2024.
Okay, explain to people what it is.
So, Thanksgiving is a weekend event, the weekend either before or after Thanksgiving, where I host a low-cost or sometimes free edged weapon and unarmed self-defense seminar weekend.
Sounds good.
Out here on the island, yeah.
Sounds good. You put me down as a placeholder for 2024. I will be in Boston, and I have family in Long Island, so I will be making the trip down as long as I can squeeze that in.
Sounds good to me.
All right. Final shout out you want to give friends, family, sponsors, brands, etc. And then also please plug your two books and where people can get them.
So my two books are on Amazon and Lulu. They are the Medusa Edged Weapon System Manual and Shock and Latch, a Primer. Shock and Latch was designed to fill the gaps that were left after the Medusa Manual, where if you don't know exactly what shock and latch means, it provides you with examples and how to. I just want to say thank you to Mike and Seth Raymond for everything. Thank you, Evan, for having me on. David Carr, you're a piece of crap. No, he's my best friend. Ironside Edgeworks, Savage Creatures, Defense Tools, Echo Delta Charlie out in South Africa. You know, you guys are all great. I appreciate the tools you make. You put them in the right hands.
Gotcha. And I'll have Jason shoot me over some links as well for any of the stuff he wants to share links to. We'll drop it in the show notes down below for people who are listening and want to do some more research or follow up. Obviously, you can hit me or him up, but then also check the show notes down below. For our listeners, check out, especially if anyone's new to the Strength and Speed podcast, please go check out the website, teamstrengthspeed.com. As I said, you can find a fighting section, a faith section, and then a fitness section. Fitness section is primarily on the sport of obstacle course racing. We just are entering a new partnership with a new sponsor or partner, whatever you want to call it, Stakora. So Stakora. And it is a jewelry company. And you're like, well, why are you partnering with a jewelry company? It's because they have a lot of religious, Greek, and then Orthodox related jewelry, right? So the Orthodox cross I have tattooed on my back, they have necklaces of that. They have all like the different saint necklaces, everything from like on the cheaper side, we're talking like, you know, $50 range, all the way up to like platinum and gold, like 18 karat gold, you know, multi-layer where it's like $500+. So a lot of really nice stuff on there. I just ordered a St. George medal. So it's St. George Spear and the Dragon, which I always like as like a warrior saint, kind of aligning my faith with my fighting. And then on top of that, they have two Medusa necklaces that are pretty nice. One of them is just a Medusa head, and the other one's a Medusa head with like the Greek key circle essentially going around it. So people can check out Stakora.com. I think I should have hopefully have a discount code for people by the time this comes out. If I do, it will be in the show notes. And then anyone who wants to hear more about some of my background on the military side, my biography, Ultra OCR Man from Special Forces Soldier to Record Setting Obstacle Course Racer, is on Amazon. It's on my website. It's on Audible if you want to listen. That's usually the easiest method to get. That's how I consume a lot of my books, so I do recommend that. And then for our obstacle course racing people, check out the Bleg Myths that we have up on the site. And anyone who's a martial artist and competes actively, my latest book is called The Sponsored Athlete. It talks about making money and getting partnerships and reducing costs when you're racing. It's specifically, a lot of it, I talk about obstacle course racing because that's my background, but the same lesson's going to be applied to martial arts, just like we did with this podcast, taking stuff from martial arts and applying it to obstacle course racing. So also available on Amazon. All right, I've run my mouth enough. Thank you for listening. Jason, thanks again for coming on. Thanks for all your knowledge you've shared. And I will hopefully see you at Shanksgiving.
Definitely. See you then.
All right. We'll catch you later.
Bye.